The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. It's 7 minutes after 12 midday. Manor Line's on through till 1. Remember, you can call on 66 13 68. Text 166177. Email studio at manxradio.com. And the WhatsApp number is 166177. Today, Chief Executive of Manx Care, Teresa Cope, is here, and the Chairman, Andrew Foster. Manx Care provides the day-to-day operation, the nitty-gritty, the curing bit of the Manx Health Service, primary care, urgent and emergency, integrated care, integrated community care, mental health services, social care, specialised care, preventative health care, screening and immunisation, research, women's, children's and families, public health delivery, and private health care as well. And Teresa Cope and Andrew Foster with us today. Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, big meeting yesterday, Teresa. Just draw a thumbnail round it, would you? What happened yesterday?
Yeah, so yesterday was our board meeting in public, and as ever, we spent a lot of time discussing our key three priorities, feeding back as to where we've got to. So our priorities around improving quality and patient safety, improving the culture of the organisation, and also improving the financial health of the organisation. So whilst we discussed a number of items, we spent a lot of time discussing those three areas, reflecting on the level of progress we have made over the last 12 months. And that was depicted in our annual report, which came to the board yesterday. But also, most importantly, what does the next 12 months look like, and where do we go next with these? So yesterday was a board meeting which wasn't entirely unusual, but we did more of the detail in public, understanding and charting our progress, but also importantly, understanding and discussing as a board where we go next.
Okay, Andrew Foster, as chair of Manx Care. I mean, obviously it's a brand new organisation, but has it been entirely cohesive? As the first year, first 18 months of Manx Care been entirely cohesive? And basically, you know, do you know anything different now to what you knew back then?
We had the sort of starting point of the Sir Jonathan Michael report, which had investigated healthcare on the island and, as you know, made 24 recommendations for improvement, but also gave an analysis of the state of healthcare. And in some areas, that was quite critical. So we knew that we were going to inherit issues to do with information, issues to do with systems and quality. And I think it's fair to say that in our first 12 months of existence, we dug under some of those stones and found quite a lot more issues during that 12 months. But as Teresa has said, yesterday was a progress report on that first 12 months. I think in many areas it's been very substantial progress. And I think our board is extremely cohesive. We have this combination of executive directors and non-executive directors. The non-executive directors are a mixture of local residents who really understand the island, and then people who have got from off the island but with some other particular skill or perspective to bring. So, yes, I do think it's a very cohesive board.
Some of the notes from the public board meeting yesterday, obviously, historically the DHSC struggled with finance. Obviously, delivering services to a high standard costs an awful lot of money. We're in a particular situation being an Isle of Man, so we often struggle with recruitment as well. Mm. But gaps in safety, compliance and performance that have been identified. Teresa Cope, did somebody know this was there? Because obviously you found this out when you took Manx Care over.
I think some of the issues were always there and acknowledged. I think what we've been able to do over the last 12 months is quantify that completely, so get underneath the data, absolutely quantify the level of gap, and then make plans to respond. So, for example, our director of nursing has undertaken what is called acute and dependency reviews. So being able to really drill down into the detailed establishments at ward level and being able to assess the acuity of the patients that we care for in order to ensure and determine what does, say, staffing look like
are
for
we,
that ward.
Are we really 92 nurses short?
And we are, and that's just across the Nobles acute sector. And that doesn't factor in allied health professionals, you know, the therapists who support that day-to-day delivery of care. And it doesn't determine how many nurses we're short across, say, mental health services or the community. So it is a substantial gap. We talked on this show before about the 19% vacancy factor. So one in five of the posts we have established for the organisation are vacant. And it's a significant gap. And when you compare that perhaps to the number of vacancies for registered nurses in the UK, they're running at about 10 to 11%. So we're sort of behind that position with a bigger level of recovery to achieve against a backdrop of challenging finances and a very competitive market. You know, there are thousands of nurse vacancies across in the UK. I think the last was reported at 40,000. So it is incredibly difficult to recruit and retain. And obviously what we've uncovered is we have a bigger gap to try and address. But, you know, we are committed. We're looking at the overseas nursing programme, which we've asked them if they can deliver us 100 nurses in the next 12 months to be able to respond to that gap. And then we are absolutely committed to growing our own heroes. I went to the I'll Learn event where that pre-preceptorship nursing programme is being run, and it's highly valuable, high calibre individuals coming through that. And we want to be able to grow our own heroes, okay, to double the number of training places.
How do
Ireland.
We stop them leaving the Isle of Man once they're qualified?
Well, I think it's multifactorial. We have to make sure they are working in an environment which is supportive. So we have to ensure we're working in a positive culture, which is why we're placing so much importance on cultural improvement. We have to give them the training and development opportunities, but it has to be affordable for them to live here. And I think what we're seeing over the last 18 months is we've had great success in being able to recruit to the more highly paid roles. And certainly we've had great success in consultant appointments and senior management appointments. But it's harder to attract the band five nurse whose salary is £25,000 to £30,000 when the cost of living is so high. And housing particularly is incredibly expensive. It's very expensive to live on the island.
OK, let's go to the lines. Julian, you're live with Andrew Foster and Teresa Cope.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Andrew Foster. And hi, Teresa Cope. Yeah, I've got a question for you. Probably Teresa would be possibly the best one to answer it. And as you know, we've got the UK MHRA, which is the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency. And there's a European counterpart called the EMA, or the European Medicine Agency. And that EMA has a mortality monitoring system called EuroMOMO, M-O-M-O. And the official website for that is euromomo.eu. And if you go into the official website there at EuroMOMO.eu and you click on graphs and maps in the tab and you go down to excess mortality, it's indicating that since May last year, which is specifically about week 22, the excess deaths amongst children has increased by 7 times over the expected number previous to that. I'm just wondering, how would you account for that?
I'm not familiar with the data you're talking about, Julian, but happy to look at it. I think one of the things which Manx Care inherited and has put in place is that there wasn't necessarily a level of mortality review going on that we would normally expect, or that I would have expected having come from the UK NHS. And that is because there wasn't something called clinical coding in place where we look at the outcomes and the data of completed patient episodes in order to assign data in order to inform things like morbidity and mortality reviews. And we've put that in place since Manx Care started. So we are developing a clinical coding function. And that has numerous benefits, but it is a fundamental requirement of healthcare delivery in order to inform such reviews as what you've talked about, Julian. So whilst I can't explain the specifics of the data that you're referring to, it potentially will mean that over the next few months, few years, we are starting to build data on patient outcomes, on excess deaths, on mortality, which we will be using and do use to inform future healthcare delivery and reviewing our standards against that. So happy to take that offline, Julian, and I will have a look at it if you send the reference through.
Okay, lots of questions. Andrew, by the way, we were waiting to get to you, but I think your mobile phone's given up. Could you please ask Teresa Cope, says this correspondent, why ManxCare don't allow consultants to prescribe the same drugs as UK consultants? I'm thinking particularly about biologic medications. I've been told by three medical professionals at Nobles that if I lived in the UK, they'd be able to prescribe drugs for me, but they can't because ManxCare won't sanction them. This means the island is falling behind the UK and patients are putting up with serious pain unnecessarily. Not all the medicines are more expensive than the ones available on the Isle of Man. I think it's unfair.
I would agree it's unfair. And, one of the things that we have done in conjunction with the Department of Health and Social Care with Treasury support is to start a programme to implement what are called NICE approved technologies, so the National Institute for Clinical Effectiveness, which governs the right level of prescribing, the most effective treatments that should be used. And for the first time, Treasury funded NICE approved technologies in this year's mandate down to ManxCare. Now, the challenge we have is that this was implemented in the UK 22 years ago. So there has always been that inequity that a patient on the island who was under the consultant care of someone in the UK couldn't access those medications or those interventions easily. But we are now starting to put that right. But there is a huge amount of policy work as well as funding in order to redress that sort of 22-year gap of the NHS in the UK putting in this incrementally. So I absolutely acknowledge that this is unfair for the population of the island. It's very good news that we have now got the approval from Treasury, supported by the Department of Health and Social Care, to implement NICE technologies. And we will be rolling this out over the next few months. We have to caution, we cannot do 22 years' work in a short amount of time. It is going to take time to roll it out safely, but we are committed, and we brought a paper to the board yesterday afternoon in the private section, which just gave an update on that progress. But we will be taking this forward.
Okay, with Andrew Foster as well. You've worked all over the UK. You did a lot of work in Lancashire. Is the Isle of Man comparable to anywhere in the UK? And I just wonder what, in relative terms, how you think ManxCare is doing.
So in many ways, the Isle of Man is extremely comparable to Lancashire. The diseases that you see are the same. The population age group is broadly the same, slightly older on the Isle of Man. And the services provided are pretty much the same. And, there's very much of the NHS system that works in exactly the same way in both places. But what we have seen is that an inheritance of being about 20 years behind some of the systems improvement that have gone on in the NHS in England. And a point that I'd like to make very strongly is that this is not a criticism of our staff. Our staff are actually wonderful. It's just years of not being brought up to date. As Teresa has said, for example, on clinical information, which would enable us to explore mortality. And that excellent question that Julian asked is exactly the question we'd be asking if we had that data. And that's what we will have everywhere. So in answer to your question, there's a lot of similarities. And that's why people like myself and Teresa have been recruited, because we've been on that journey. We've been on the improvement journey in the UK. We've learned some of the how not to do it as well as the how to do it. And hopefully we can do it much quicker here.
Teresa Cope, in terms of the 9 million figures being bandied around, historically DHSC always ran. It was always a black hole for finances, and the public know that. So, and bearing in mind, the public only see the front face. They see the services, they see the dentists, the doctors, the podiatry, they see everything when they need it. And typically, they don't see the organisation that goes behind it. Largely, they don't care about the organisation. They expect, you know, civil servants and people, administrators, to run that service. So, you're a clinician. Do you feel a bit frustrated by the way, if you like, MaxCare has been shoehorned into this position by DHSC?
I think it is difficult. I mean, I think we absolutely acknowledge the inherited position. And, you know, I absolutely echo what Andrew's just said. The staff who I've inherited, that I now lead, are exceptionally good. It is frustrating that things like NICE approved technologies and some of those other developments that I think are hugely beneficial to support staff and to deliver great patient care, we're having to put those in now. As I say, we're keen to work at pace, to do it safely. And yes, as a clinician, I absolutely advocate for patient care. I understand the standards. Myself and four of my colleagues on the board as executive directors, we're all Care Quality Commission inspectors in our own right. So we understand what good looks like, and we are absolutely striving to achieve that. That's why, you know, when I was in shadow form before I took over formally on the 1st of April, I understand the impact that long waits have, which is why it became such a priority for us, both in terms of that access, but the impact of people psychologically. They're in pain. That means they go back to their GPs. The whole of the system becomes very inefficient when you're leaving people to wait far too long for healthcare provision. And, you know, we absolutely understand that.
How do you get on with Laurie Hooper?
We get on well. We don't always agree on everything, but you know, I think it's been helpful to have that time with Laurie. So, you know, he understands it from our perspective. We respect their position. I think they respect our position. We won't always agree on things, but you know, I think that is part of that evolvement of that clear separation between the politics, yeah, the legislation and the reform from the operational delivery.
And the chief exec of DHSC?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, Stuart's new and interim. And we're still working out how we work together. You know, it's unfortunate that in 6 months I've worked with three different chief execs from the DHSC. But nonetheless, we are...
I mean, that would seem to indicate dysfunction.
I'm not sure I can comment on that, but it's something that we set out right at the outset, the importance of understanding each other's perspective, respecting each other's relatives' positions, and working in partnership together. Now, that often means we, as I say, we don't always agree on everything, but we are trying to align ourselves so we make the best decisions on behalf of the island's population.
Okay, we've got a call that came in. Let's just hear. And this is a lady.
Hi, I'd like to ask MaxCare what they're doing about their complaints department. I had a complaint upheld on the 3rd of June 2020. In November 2021, I wrote to Laurie Hooper, who said this was unacceptable. The 15th of May this year, Laurie Hooper said this wasn't acceptable, and I still heard nothing. Perhaps you could ask them what they're doing about complaints.
Andrew
Thank
Foster?
You.
Well, Theresa is better to speak operationally, but this is one of the updates that we received at the board yesterday about the complaints process. And we have established a number of targets in terms of the turnaround time. And we don't always meet the target, but we are increasingly meeting the target. And part of that reason is not wanting to respond to the complaint, but very often patient complaints are complex, require you to speak to a number of individuals. I'm horrified to hear that this lady has waited so long, and that is definitely not right. And I apologise for her having experienced that. And if privately she would get in touch with us outside this, I'm sure we can see what the problem is and we can expedite a response.
Okay. From the Manx Care Public Board meeting yesterday, Theresa Cope, I mean, it was said that obviously the health and social care system under the DHSC struggled to deliver services at a high standard, as evidenced by gaps in safety, compliance and performance that were identified. Many of the issues were as a result of a combination of unresolved inefficiencies and significant underfunding. I mean, did you know all this when you took the job?
I knew some of it, and you know,
it's rather like buying a house, isn't it, when you buy it and suddenly find the roof's leaking and the boiler doesn't work.
Yes, but you might still love the house regardless of its leaky roof. Yes, I did, and it was part of the challenge, but it was also part of that opportunity to take forward a level of improvement and reform across an integrated health and care system, which is sort of my passion, having worked in mental health, in acute hospitals, in social care previously. You know, I still would have absolutely taken the job. And I think what we identified, I had the benefit of being in post 4 months before Manx Care went live on the 1st of April, is I did a lot of listening to staff. I did a lot of my own baselining and investigation. And that's where the three priorities came from. I think what we then went on to do was to put more granular detail around the level of gap in all of those areas, which we absolutely acknowledged as we went live from the 1st of April. So, for example, we knew we inherited enforcement notices and non-compliance with information governance. And what we then did over the course of the year in conjunction with Cabinet Office is absolutely define that level of non-compliance in order to be able to put a plan in place which addresses that. And that was replicated across quality and safety, across culture, across the financial positions, putting in the governance of the organisation so the board has a clear line of sight down to frontline delivery. So, yeah, so no, I didn't understand entirely, because there was no former reports to look at, there was no detail. But actually, you know, it's been incredibly helpful. And the listening exercise with staff was something which was hugely important to me. And I think one of the things which I think is really, really important, as much as we talk about performance and quality and finance, it's really important to reflect the cultural change we are trying to see across Manx Care. So how we behave, how we conduct ourselves, the values of the organisation, how our staff feel, because we want our staff to feel valued. It's really, really important for retention. It's really important for recruitment. And you will have seen from the board papers, we reported back on two big pieces of cultural work that have taken place in the organisation during the time of Manx Care, with a very clear plan to deliver. You know, what we have to do, and this is what we heard very, very strongly and clearly, is we have to act. You know, there's been lots of reports saying what it's like. What our staff have to have is the confidence we will follow through in that, and we will make some real tangible change around the behaviours and the culture in the organisation.
Okay, Andrew Foster, who's setting the timetable for where Manx Care has to go? Has Manx Care got its own timetable, or is DHSC putting signposts for the future?
So this is about the different responsibilities of DHSC and Manx Care. Excuse me. So the way that it works is that DHSC have initially set us a one-year mandate, what they want us to achieve in year, and then in the second year we've got another one-year mandate. In future there will be a three-year mandate. So DHSC will be setting out what they want us to achieve, and then the plan for how we do that is down to Manx Care and its board. And Theresa and the executive directors will put forward a plan, the board will approve it and then monitor it. That's the split of responsibilities.
But this is the DHSC that couldn't provide high services, services to a high standard before, and historically has presented Manx Care with a bundle of problems they knew about, but you didn't when you took over Manx Care.
So I think this is the recommendation of Jonathan Michael, to separate from the role of the DHSC in terms of policy and strategy, and then have the delivery organisation concentrating on that. So we have, although we do work closely in partnership, we have very different roles, and and their contribution is very different now to what it used to be.
I'm just thinking that the perception from the public may be that the DHSC is pointing to a big pile of coal and giving you a teaspoon to move it.
Well, people who work in healthcare throughout the world always want more money. Every department of Manx Care would like more money. But I also have to see it from the government point of view here, which has just gone through the COVID crisis, which has been hugely expensive, not just in healthcare, but in other ways too. And now we're in the middle of a new financial crisis based on massive inflation and fuel costs. So I think the government is very sympathetic to us and they've been very supportive. But I understand from their point that they've got an awful lot of other demands to satisfy right now.
OK, Juan, hi, you're live with Teresa Cope and Andrew Foster.
Hey, good afternoon, Teresa. Good afternoon, Andrew. Good afternoon, Andy. From what people I've been talking to that deal with Manx Care, it's not a case of if Manx Care is going to work efficiently. It's a case of Manx Care has to work efficiently. I know you've been left with a lot of luggage and a lot of baggage when you've taken over. And I would love a programme with you guys talking about the efficacy of COVID inoculations, but that will be for another date if anyone wants to appear their head above the surface. What I'd like to touch on is mental health issues and suicides. A few days ago, there was a poor soul with a rope around his neck ready to jump off Quay Bridge. Obviously, a lot of this stuff that's going on in the island is not reported, and I'm sure that's there's correctness in that. I'm more aligned with a conversation I had with someone last week with reference to their own son, who was put at high risk with the health service on suicide after a suicide that he'd gone through with someone he was related to. And even on a high risk, he actually was allowed out and committed suicide quite recently. Now, I know statistically we're coming into December and January, which is statistically a very high month for people taking their lives and mortality. And with the up-and-coming crisis that we've got, I wanted to know what safety nets Manx Care have got in place for people who need this, and what safety nets are in place for when the safety net breaks, like the last incident that I just described to you.
Teresa Cope.
Yeah, thank you, Duren. Yes, and you will appreciate, Duren, just what a complex area of care mental health is. And you know, part of what we need to ensure is that there is a lot of early intervention support. So we have to all be tuned into people who need support. So focus on well-being and talking and acknowledging when people are unwell or feeling unwell, and friends, colleagues, family members also spotting that. That's really important, and that's part of that let's talk type of program of just raising awareness and being able to signpost and point people in the right direction of care and services. I acknowledge there is a long way to go with mental health services in on the island, and to bring them to a wide range of services that are available. Again, the staff we have in those services are fantastic. They do an absolutely great job. But there is a recognised absence in talking therapies. So psychological therapies, talking therapies, which are hugely important, and those first lines of intervention, which do help people and it stops them going into crisis. So it gives them that early help and support. We also recognise that, you know, one of the key things we have to do in order to improve access to mental health is just to make sure the waiting lists are as short as possible. And that's why, as part of this phase of restoration and recovery, we've put investment into mental health, working with a local charity, particularly focusing on children and young people's waiting list. And whilst we develop our psychological therapy services, so made a number of senior appointments, building that service, and with a commitment in our mandate to develop a clearer mental health strategy going forward, both for adults and for children and young people. But we're very attuned to it. The number of incidents relating to people who have lost their lives through suicide is something we have discussed as an executive team. We brought information to the board yesterday around those cases. And we are very much involved in the suicide prevention work led by public health across the island. But I, you know, the final piece of that is around the legislation reform, bringing in Mental Capacity Act, this is the DHSE role. So there's some legislation and reform work required around mental health provision. And it's that partnership working. It's working with other agencies to be able to put wraparound support around in individuals.
Okay. All right, Ewan, thanks for that. Lots more to talk about. Dozens and dozens and dozens of emails, phone calls to get to as well. We're back with Andrew Foster, Chair of Manx Care, and Teresa Cope, the Chief Exec.
You're sure to find something fabulous at Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers.
From stunning gold and silver jewellery that you can make extra special with an engraved message, to local prints and gifts for every occasion, Ramsey Art Gallery also stock a fantastic range of watches, including Ted Baker, Citizen, Storm and Accurist.
Plus Seconda, Timex, Sexy and Bulova.
All with lifelong free strap adjustment. You'll love what you find in store when you visit Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers, opposite the RNLI shop in Ramsey. The Mike's Motors summer sale is now on.
We are number one. We are family run. Mike's Motors. Mike's Motors.
Don't miss the Mike's Motors huge summer sale event. Save on cars, save on commercials, save on campers and motorhomes too. But be quick, at these prices, once they're gone, they're gone. Don't miss out. Click mikesmotors.im. Call 823-200. That's 823-200.
Do you know a scrap man? Cos I've got scrap to clear. Causing call for brass and lead, and I need cash for beer.
What? You don't know a scrap man? Gustains of Foxhall is the one for you. Gustains will take all scrap metal and is also licensed for dry cell and lead acid batteries. So don't delay. Ring 801-337 now.
So now we know a scrap man and all our scrap's been cleared. Ring 801-337, then have cash for beer. Call Cost Dice today and get yourself a beer.
FC Isle of Man's new season is now well underway, and after a spell on the road, the team is back on Manx soil this weekend. The Ravens face Barnoldswick Town at the Bowl this Saturday and will be looking to get more valuable points on the board in the early stages of the new NWCFL Premier Division campaign. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Barnoldswick Town, kicking off at 6 p.m. on Saturday. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our AM 1368 and digital platforms.
The Man in Line. Brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
With Andrew Foster and Teresa Cope from Manx Care, and a note in from G on 313. What's Manx Care doing to make GPs more available and to stop them indirectly pushing people to attend A&E because no appointments are available?
Can I take the GP question? Because I've taken a particular interest in primary care since I've joined. And indeed, it was one of the things that attracted me most to this job, the fact that primary care is part of the integrated system. And you're absolutely right. We talked earlier on about the shortage of nurses. There is a significant shortage of GPs. I think they've had an extremely difficult time these last couple of years because of the increased demand once lockdown was removed. And we desperately need to give them more support. So what we are doing, the best way of bringing people is to have them trained here in the first place. And without giving any confidences away, I know that on Monday I'm going to be interviewing somebody for a consultant who trained here about 12 years ago in his first year. And our training programme for junior doctors here is the highest rated in the UK by the people who participated in it. So part of the solution is to train people here and get them to come back. But equally, we need to clearly articulate the advantages of this island to GPs. It's a beautiful place. It's got this integrated care system. If you like motorsports, then, you know, that's a big attraction too. So it's a matter of getting those messages out and putting forward a package. But I know that in the next 12 months, there's about three or four people will become full-time GPs that have been GP trainees. And I know that there's various others in the pipeline. But that's not to say that we've still got a long way to go. And I'm a big lover and admirer of primary care on the island already.
A note in from Dave on 962 says, can you explain, I've paid NI for 49 years and I've waited a year. I'm waiting over a year for a dental appointment, Teresa Cope.
Yeah, so we recognise there's been some huge challenges inherited around access to dentists. We have got a plan in place. At the board yesterday, we talked about a 500 patient reduction in the number of people waiting for a dentist in the last few months. And everybody who is waiting for a dentist is expected to be allocated by the end of the financial year. So, yes, apologies, and we acknowledge that people have had to wait a long time. And it is down to people moving into more private practice and also the national shortage of NHS dentists. We are addressing that through the contractual framework, but equally we do have a clear plan to ensure that if you are looking for a dentist, by this time next year, you will be able to be allocated immediately.
A note in from ASA, well actually one from ASA and one from Jan, and ASA said there are thousands of people who work for financial institutions on the Isle of Man and they have a private health package that comes with their salary. But there is no private unit at Nobles Hospital and you're sending people off island to go to Spire, here, there and everywhere. So what's happening? And a note in from Jan again just said, could you ask what's happening with the private unit at Nobles Hospital?
Yes, so so we always recognise that it was a priority of the DHSC to have a private patient unit. However, during COVID last year, that became impossible to be able to open that up. We needed that space as the extra COVID ward. And now we're doing restoration and recovery on the waiting lists. And at the moment, using our private patient suite to be able to facilitate that. And I think that is important. It is important we stabilise health and care services. We have signed off a plan through the executive team to gradually open private patient services, starting with outpatients, some diagnostics, then moving to local and day case procedures, and then moving up. We acknowledge there is a demand there, yeah. And we're keen to start that. But where we have been as a board is wanting to absolutely stabilise services for NHS patients first.
But would you be open to somebody like Spire or one of the other providers building their own private hospital here?
We wouldn't object. I mean, I think we would always want to do things in partnership. It is really important we have good governance. It is important that we have clarity about what the consultants that are working and the staff working for Manx Care are doing, and then their private practice. We know that blended model is really important, and certainly it's important on the island. But as I say, this does need good governance, a clear financial framework, because we must ensure that our NHS patients are looked after first.
OK. Howard, you're live with Andrew Foster and Teresa Cope.
Good afternoon, Andrew and Teresa. I'll call it by first names in that sense. Been a bit forward. But a question. Several years ago, my wife and I, well, we used the same optician. And her optician said, I would have a word with your GP because you have the start of cataracts. And we'd heard about the waiting list several years long, but she wrote in and she did eventually get an appointment with a consultant at Nobles Hospital. And he said, yes, he said, but it's only on one eye and this, that and the other. And sent her away. And it must have been close on a year later, she got another letter to go up, and that was this year, to see another consultant. It was a different chap this time. And she was in there for about 5 or 10 minutes and came out, and she said to me, he's told me I haven't got cataracts. And I appreciate this is a different disease, macular degeneration. He said, you've got the macular degeneration, and that's it, more or less. So I said, being a suspicious person I am, I said, that sounds awfully like a subtle way of reducing the cataract waiting list, move you to another disease of the eye, and that will bring the waiting list for cataracts down. Is that possible? Is it probable or awfully unlikely?
Unlikely. I think they are very different conditions and require a very different different treatment. And we absolutely acknowledge that we've had very long waiting lists for cataract surgery in excess of years. And we know there is high demand for this service. We on average would add about 80 patients per month to the cataract waiting list. And that's why it's been one of our priority areas, working in conjunction with our third party partner Synaptic, in order to deliver a cataract surgery program. I think I talked about this last time, Andy, but since the middle of March, when we started this program, we have done 346 cataract operations. And all those patients have been through now without complications. They've had their 6-week follow-up. And we have learned yesterday evening, which is excellent news, that Treasury have allocated further funding to help us with our waiting list reduction program. So that cataract program will continue. We recognise how debilitating it is, and are committed to ensure that we are reducing that waiting list and getting good turnaround times for surgery, such as cataract surgery and hip and knee replacements.
Okay. Thanks, Howard.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, thank you. And just briefly, Teresa Coe, what was the rationale for bringing in outside providers?
Partly it was just to be able to respond to the waiting lists in a timely way. So we know, particularly in cataract surgery, in eye care, we only had two consultants. One had left, and then one was on, sort of, unfortunately, on sick leave. So it was a capacity constraint. And in order to respond in a really timely way, we really wanted a third-party partner. In orthopaedics, the Synaptic team are working in conjunction with our own orthopaedic surgeons, so effectively adding additional capacity to the NHS system, because we know all of our clinicians are already fully stretched. So if we was to try and get these waiting lists down using our own staff, it would take us an awful lot longer. And we want to really, really make an impact on this waiting list within the next 12 months.
All right. Manx Care and the situation over the past 18 months, where we are, the finances, the care provided, and your thoughts. Back with Andrew Foster and Teresa Cope in a moment.
Tours Isle of Man are heading to Coronation Street at the end of October. Wonder the world-famous cobbles as we go behind the scenes in Weatherfield. If that wasn't enough, this special 4-day trip also has a visit across the north of England, including the National Science and Media Museum in Bradford, Media City UK, and Ozzel Twisell Mills for a good shopping spree. And then we'll bring you home straight to your door. Find out more and book online now.
Visit tours.co.im.
Concerned, confused, or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved, and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
If it's car or bike speed you need, head to Jerby Drag Event this weekend for the Ultimate Street Bike Championship, Old School Stockers, and Pro Stock Bikes. It has to be Jerby Drag Racing this Saturday and Sunday.
So, you think you know your TV theme tunes? Prove it, and you could win a £200 voucher to spend at 1886 Bar and Grill with Manx Radio and Tell Skips. This Saturday and Sunday, listen out for the clues on air and on Manx Radio's Facebook page. If you can guess the famous TV theme, text its name and your name to 166177 when you hear the cue to call, and you'll be in the draw to win. And remember, if you need a skip, just search Tells Limited or call 677-137. It's another winning weekend on your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and the green future.
Faster Mike, good afternoon with Teresa Cope and Andrew Foster from Manx Care today. Kevin, you're live with the people from Manx Care.
Hello. Hello, Andrew, and hello, Teresa. I spoke back in July regarding a waiting time for my wife's hip surgery, which you might recall we actually self-funded two operations. Now, we had a consultation with our surgeon this week, actually, and a couple of interesting points arose from the meeting we had at the hospital. he said that the funding is really allocated on a rolling basis, and it seems to be a 3-month basis on which the budget is allocated for the operations, which was a surprise to us, and he seems to be a little bit disenfranchised with that arrangement. And also, the other concern is that the wards, I think, 11 and 12, have been requisitioned for other purposes. So my question is really, what happens when this funding runs out for the hip operations in December, possibly December? And what will happen with the consultants and nurses and the ward when that budget expires?
Yeah, so for orthopaedic surgery at the moment, the hip and knee replacements, we are working doubly. So our teams are operating, and also the Synaptic teams are operating. So we are trying to absolutely double up the capacity we're able to deliver. You're right, we haven't got a long-term funding commitment. We are putting in a series of business cases through to the Department of Health and Social Care and then up to Treasury. And the additional money that we were secured yesterday evening takes us until December. We would like to plan on a much longer-term footing with a much more assured financial position. But that just isn't possible at the moment. We have to keep preparing the business cases. There's a piece of work going on in the background, which is for Manx Care to absolutely determine the long-term capacity needed around what we would call 18-week referral to treatment time. So being able to understand exactly what funding we would need to deliver that commitment in the island plan on waiting times. But that is work that is currently ongoing at the moment. So at the moment, all the additional waiting list capacity response that's happening at the moment around knee surgery, hip surgery, cataract surgery, general surgery, mental health, is additional business cases to Treasury. We do not have that funding in our baseline to respond at the pace where we think we need to in order to meet that expectation.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that, Kevin. Sorry, we have to move on because we've touched barely 10% of the stuff that's come in today. But there is some good news. Andrew called in just to say he'd been to the hospital for a blood test today. Couldn't fault the system. Very efficient and very timely today. Teresa Cope, I've not even touched on social care, and there were some quite disturbing remarks made in the social care, the independent investigation into cultural issues. I'm slightly unfair because we're almost out of time, but bullying, nepotism and unfairness in working practice in social care. Did that surprise you?
The listening event I did prior to Manx Care starting indicated no, probably not. I was surprised by the level. As the chief executive, the accountable officer, I absolutely acknowledge the experience our staff have experienced in the past. It is really, really important, as I said earlier, that we respond clearly with a clear plan and support staff. It will take a while to keep reiterating those messages, but that's why culture is one of our priorities. We must make sure our staff feel supported. They do an amazing job under difficult circumstances.
You've mentioned that many times about making sure that the staff feel supported. So people being micromanaged, bullied out of work, being threatened with disciplinary proceedings, nobody outside would think that would ever happen within a situation like this.
No. And there is no place for it in health and care. You know, there is an absolute link between culture and the quality of care delivery that is evidence-based and comes up time and time again. So, you know, it's important we acknowledge how staff have felt, that Manx Care, mind leadership, the team around me, have the opportunity to reset that, and that's incredibly important.
Okay. Right, we're just out of time now. Andrew Foster and Teresa Cope, first of all, as I say, we've barely touched the surface here. So first of all, will you come back in the new year and give us a new year report?
Of course.
Okay. So Andrew Foster, with the benefit of your experience of what the past 18 months, where's Manx Care going?
Well, I think if you have the metaphor of climbing a mountain, we knew that we were going to have to climb a mountain in the first place. As the year has gone by, we've learnt a lot more about how high that mountain is, and we've had a few slips back, but we've also made significant progress. Are we anywhere near the top of the mountain? No. But I think over the next 3 to 5 years, we can have great confidence that we will improve all the issues we've been talking about today, the culture of the organisation, patient safety, and its financial effectiveness as well. So I think we've got the right team to do that. We've got the right staff. We've got the right plan. And we just need to be steady of purpose to continue that drive.
OK. Teresa Cope, I think it's important that the public know, is the chief exec of Manx Care happy in her job?
Yes, I am. You know, it's a huge privilege. It remains so. Absolutely no regrets. I love my job. And I am here for the long term. And just using the mountain analogy, I will get to the top of that mountain.
So the first priority on Monday morning, what will you be looking at?
So huddle with the exec team, reflect on the last week, plan forward.
Thanks for being with us today. It's been extremely... Thanks to everybody, by the way, who called, the people we couldn't get to, the many, many dozens of messages that we couldn't get to. Lots of people with praise for Manx Care. But obviously, well, times certainly change. Maybe Sir Jonathan Michael did the right thing. Maybe he knew more than he let on. And we'll be talking to Laurie Hooper, Minister for Health and Social Care, sometime in the future. In the meantime, thanks to Howard Kane producing today, and thank you for tuning in. Man in Line's back on Monday at 12 midday.
WIN